ShareCare, helping you get younger, get guidance, get better care, get smart, get fit. Radio MD presents ShareCare Radio with Daria Long Gillespie, MD.
Hello, welcome to ShareCare Radio. This is Dr. Daria. Remember, ShareCare Radio is where we distill the health information that you've heard to let you know what you need to know to help you live, look, and feel superbly. So let's jump into the health news of the week. Some stuff you may have heard, some things you may not have, the things that I think you really need to know about. First of all is a study about movement and your waistline. Of course, it's no surprise, we've heard a lot about this, but this new study said that more time spent standing rather than sitting could improve your blood sugar, fats in the blood, and cholesterol levels. So the study also found that replacing time spent sitting with time walking also could help your waistline and your body mass index. Now, researchers in Australia gave participants activity monitors to about 700 men and women ages anywhere from 36 to 80. And the monitors determined how long each person spent sitting, sleeping, lying down, standing, and taking steps. They wore them 24/7. And the study found that the extra 2 hours a day spent standing rather than sitting was associated with a 2% lower average blood sugar levels and 11% lower average triglycerides. That's a really big difference. So by 2 hours a day. So the extra standing time associated with higher average levels of HDL, which is the good cholesterol, and replacing 2 hours a day of sitting with stepping was associated with about 11% lower average BMI and a 7.5 centimeter, about 3 inches smaller average waist circumference. So very best is that you replace sitting time with walking. Now, we can't always do that. Not all of us have treadmills at our desk, and I worry that I'd actually fall over doing them. But if you can just stand up or just take a walking break, it will benefit your health every time you replace standing or walking or anything with moving around as opposed to sitting. It's going to help. Our next one was about toddler development. Now, I am a mom, as a lot of you know, and so I'm always paying attention to ways that I can really give my daughter the very best as far as development and education without making her totally neurotic. So this one was about researchers found that parents who joke around and pretend with their children are really teaching them important life skills as well. The study showed that children as young as 16 months old naturally learn the difference between joking and just kind of pretending by observing their parents. It showed they also understand the difference between the two, and when you do that, it lets your child learn, imagine, think creatively, and also bond with you. So there are two studies. One involved parents being asked to joke and pretend with their 16 to 20-month-old children by doing things like putting food on their heads and putting chicken on their heads. The second study involved parents with about same-age kids pretending, telling their children that maybe a round block was a horse and mismatching items like a toy chicken as a hat. Researchers found that parents can really offered cues to help the child differentiate between when they were joking and when they were pretending, and when they were serious, really through their actions and their body language. And that is important for the child's development, for them to understand the difference between seriousness and joking and pretending. Really good for their life skills and learning new information. And it's fun for you. So any interaction with your child is good. And playing with them, showing them the different ways to behave and to joke around and enjoy life is a great way for them to learn about social interaction too. Now, another study for parents, and that was about picky eating. And I know this is something, picky eating is something that all parents deal with. Some have cases that are far worse than others. And this one showed that a picky eater as a youngster was at higher risk for anxiety, depression, and even ADHD when they were older. So what does this mean? This does not mean that if you have a picky eater, your child is going to have anxiety, depression, and ADHD. What it does mean is we're still trying to figure out where the tie is, that it is always important to introduce new foods to infants and repeat it repetitively. Every child, sometimes it can take 10 to 15 or more times for them to see a food before they become comfortable with it and before they'll even try it or not spit it out. And if you do find that your child is exceptionally picky, talk to other parents. You may find that your child is just average. Talk to other parents. Talk to your pediatrician. Because if they are exceptionally picky, it may be beneficial to either get them into some therapy for eating and to look for signs to make sure that they aren't displaying other signs of anxiety or depression. Because all of these things, the earlier the intervention, the better, the greater chance you have of helping your child for the rest of their life. Okay. We're having a parent stories this week. I swear, I did not pick them all myself. This one, any parent, anyone who has lived with children will probably say, yeah, I didn't need a study to know that, but it's really important and interesting to know. Now, this new study was on families and found that even if no one in the family is showing symptoms, some type of virus may be in the family's home up to 87% of the time, and it's usually due to the children in that home. So that helps explain why bigger families with more children are sick more often, or families with children in general, especially if those children have interactions with other children. So for this study, they followed 26 families for a year, and they collected weekly symptom diaries and nasal swabs. So glad they did it, and we didn't have to do it. We could just find out the results. But they found that households without children were infected with viruses 3 to 4 weeks out of the year. That's going to be like the cold, maybe the flu, and that each additional child in a household increased the risk of illness of everybody in that family. Families with one child in the family tested positive up to 18 weeks of the year, and families with six children tested positive 47 weeks of the year. So it's true that if you have a lot of children, you feel like they are sick a lot. It's probably true. Children tend to pass illnesses very much to each other. They rub their nose and then they hug their friend, passing on that little cold onto their friend. And small children are 1.5 times more likely to be sick. Now, children under 5 were at the greatest risk, more so than older children. Again, because under 5, they really don't know proper, personal space or hygiene really don't mean a lot to them. So what does this mean? What's the takeaway? Does it mean we can bubble wrap all of our children, but that's looked down upon by the authorities. So the other option is to, be aware of it. Make sure, especially during cold and flu season, a lot of hand washing. Encourage your children, even when they're, young, 3 or 4 years old, they can learn that they need to hand wash, hand sanitizers, use all of those things in your power to make sure that you can limit the spread of viruses within your family and to you. Because if you have 6 children, you need all your energy to take care of them. Now, last study on kids, I promise. This is on brain scans and reading to children. So they actually did brain scans of preschoolers who were read to. So fascinating. They did functional MRI scans, and they measured real-time brain activity in 19 children ages 3 to 5 while they were listening to stories and to sounds other than speech as well. And parents were also interviewed about what kind of cognitive stimulation they do at home, such as how they read to their children and other activities. So the researchers found that the more often children were read to at home, the more brain activity they showed while listening to stories. Now, that was especially in areas of the brain where the mental images are formed. So what's the key takeaway? The American Academy of Pediatrics advises parents to read to their child every day. That improves language skills, it can help feed their brain development, and it's a great time for you to be able to spend some great bonding time with your child. I love to read to mine at night right before bed. It's part of our bedtime routine. We do bath and pajamas, and then we do a book right before bed. It's just a really nice way to calm down for the day. Sadly, she wants to read the exact same story every night, but nonetheless, it's a great way to grow her little brain, teach her more words, and for us to spend time together. Now, our last study I want to get to today was about spicy foods. And this new research suggests that spicy foods may be associated with an increased lifespan. Now, this was a 7-year study at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health and the Chinese Academy of Medical Sciences. They looked at 485,000 people in China. They looked at their dietary habits, including how often they ate spicy foods, red meat, alcohol, and vegetables. They found that those who had spicy foods at least once a week had a 10% reduced overall risk of death over the 7-year period, more than people who didn't eat spicy foods at all. They also had a lower risk of death from specific diseases like cancer and heart disease. The food generally came from chili peppers, so try to incorporate a little bit of chili pepper, a little bit of spicy food in your diet about once a week. You may see benefits as well. That's going to be all we have time for this week for News of the Week. Stay tuned. Remember, if you want to catch any other information, you can follow us on Twitter at ShareCare Inc. or me at Dr. Daria. Stay tuned for a fantastic interview with Dr. Keith Roach, our chief medical officer, about FDA cholesterol guidelines, and another segment on healthy travel.